Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Murder Mile. This is Grosvenor Gate in Hyde Park, W2. A short walk south of the strangulation of homeless man Mark Morrison. A few streets west of the terrorist attack on the flight crew of LL16. The last night of fun by the Bloody Butler. And a very public beheading in Park Lane. Coming soon to Murder Mile. Situated between Knightsbridge, Bayswater and Mayfair, Hyde Park is one of several royal parks open to the public.
Quiet on set.
But also used for filming movies.
And action.
Many scenes have been shot here. For films like Cold War thriller The Ipcress Files, zombie flick 28 Weeks Later, the first film about Glyndor Michael in The Man Who Never Was, and my personal favourite, Alfred Hitchcock's Frenzy.
I don't know if you know, Babs, but you're my type of woman.
Movies cost millions, but a single shot can be ruined by an extra.
All background artiste, thank you.
Who mimes talking like a fish drowning, walks like their proctologist forgot to cut his nails, and ends each scene with the hilarious quip,
That's a wrap. I shall be in my trailer.
By which, they mean toilet. And yet some of the greatest horrors to have happened here weren't fiction, but fact. On the eastern edge currently sits Grosvenor Gate. On the night of Tuesday the 23rd of October 1928, a constable's torchlight spotted two bodies splayed on the grass. Drenched in blood, with their throats slit, he believed their deaths were a double suicide. And although proven untrue, the killer's motive would not come from love nor hate, but from the twisted mind of the master of horror. My name is Michael. I am your tour guide. And this is Murder Mile. Episode 175. London After Midnight. One 100 years on, it's hard for modern audiences to appreciate the power of the silent horror films of the 1920s. Still in its infancy, cinema was a revelation. But as most films and its directors spawned from the theatres, many resulting films were stale and flat. Ignited by the greats of German Expressionism, the early 1920s saw an explosion of groundbreaking horror masterpieces, which still chill the blood even today. With no sound, except for maybe a live organ, it was the director's vision and the actor's performance which took the audience from a passive spectator to a willing victim whose life was in their hands. Released during pre-code cinema, in an era before scissor-wielding censors sliced up celluloid of any scene deemed unacceptable to the moral prudes. 1920s horrors were shocking and raw. Every horror movie requires a victim to be sacrificed. And ours was Julia Mangan. Born in 1907, Julia was raised in the windswept wilds of Glengariff, a small isolated village in the Bearer Peninsula of County Cork, on the far southwest coast of Ireland. Translated as Rough Glen, it was as remote as any settlement. As amidst a dense dark forest, small farms pockmarked the land. As ahead lay the violent swells of the Atlantic Ocean, a foreboding sea of shipwrecks and drowned souls. As a small girl, with pale white skin like an anemic ghost, and flame-red hair like the fires of hell. For Julia, coming from a large Irish family, whose parents had always strived to keep their brood clothed and fed, she was keen to do what was right and take the burden from their shoulders. As her older brother Patrick had done just a few years before, keen to find her feet, to experience life, and to earn an honest crust to send back monies to aid her parents, Julia moved to London. Arriving in August 1927, 21-year-old Julia quickly found work as a domestic servant at 35 Stanhope Gardens. Living in a small basement bedroom, which she shared with the housemaid Mary Lee. Although the hours were long and the pay was modest, she was well-liked as she was always pleasant and positive. In her spare time, Julia explored this chaotic metropolis of light and sound. Her mouth agape and her eyes wide to this new world of wonder. Fast cars, instant foods, high fashion, and the latest films. Surrounding the eternal sprawl of Piccadilly Circus were a wealth of picture houses. As a hopeless romantic, she often sat with a heavy heart, watching tragic tales of love and loss unfold. Recent hits were The Flesh and the Devil with Greta Garbo and John Gilbert, Sunrise and Seventh Heaven with Janet Gaynor, and although a horror flick which wasn't her thing, the 1923 hit The Hunchback of Notre Dame, starring horror maestro Lon Chaney as Quasimodo, the mangled beast in the bell tower, and Patsy Ruth Miller as Esmeralda, the big-hearted girl who sees beyond his deformity to find true love. For Julia, the summer of 1928 was an exciting time to be alive. 1 year after her arrival, she would find love. 3 weeks after that, she would be dead. It may be hard for modern audiences to accept, but there was no actor quite like Lon Chaney. In the silent era, where the films were soundless, and the score was often played by an old dear on a tuneless organ, interpreting the film's action into emotion, having never seen it before. As a human chameleon, able to contort every inch of his body into a beast before your eyes, Chaney was a god and a monster. Nicknamed the Man of a Thousand Faces, not only was Lon Chaney a gifted actor who endured pain to create truly jaw-dropping characters, as in the 1920 film The Penalty, when he strapped his lower legs behind his thighs to portray a double leg amputee. But he also created his own makeup. Portraying Eric in the 1925 horror classic The Phantom of the Opera, his hollow, skull-like appearance was so shocking that audiences fainted, many fled, and some of the more sensitive patrons were supposedly committed to asylums. His face is an image so grotesque, it still has the power to shock, even today. Every horror movie requires a villain to be feared. And ours was Robert Williams. Born on the 28th of December 1899, in Tannybrack in Carnarvonshire, North Wales, Robert Williams came into being as Robert Owen Jones, the illegitimate son of Lizzie Jones, a struggling single mother. Stemming from a family where insanity was a cruel curse from God. Unable to cope, and having fled to Canada, aged just 3 months old, Robert was put up for adoption. As an average lad of normal features, 5'7", pale skin, dark brown hair and blue eyes, he was as liked as any other boy. Educated at Garn Council School, he left age 14 and entered into the trades. Age 14 to 19 as a farm labourer. 19 to 21 as an apprentice joiner on the Welsh Highland and Festiniog Railway. And he continued as a carpenter for the rest of his life. Cursed by moments when this boy seemed peculiar. This was not unusual, as insanity ran rampant in his family. Two cousins were committed for life to the North Wales Asylum. One was described as an imbecile since childhood. And two had taken their own lives, aged just 18 and 14. Age 14. Gripped in an inexhaustible gloom, Robert tried to end his pain by throwing himself against the hind legs of a horse. A kick which could crush his skull and break his neck. But miraculously, he survived. Diagnosed with neurasthenia, an ill-defined condition resulting in fatigue, headaches, paranoia, and violent mood swings. Although plagued with a mental abnormality, he could not be certified as insane. On the 24th of March 1927, at Carnarvon Quarter Sessions, Robert Williams was acquitted of the indecent assault of a young woman. Little is known about this incident, but unable to deal with the shame, he fled to London. As a 27-year-old joiner, Robert lodged at 50 Robert Street in Camden. He worked on various building sites across the West End. He visited pubs with his new pals. And just like Julia, who he was yet to meet, he entertained himself with trips to the cinema. Robert loved horrors. That queasy feeling of trepidation as your palms sweat, your heart pumps, and the putrid pit of your stomach lurches and churns, as a phantom of unbridled terror stalks your senses. Released in the UK under the title of The Hypnotist, and directed by Todd Browning, who later shot Dracula and Freaks, London After Midnight was a silent horror about a spooky old house. haunted by the eternally stalking vampire of its long-dead owner. For maximum chills, the hover maestro Lon Chaney had widened his eyes and his lips with hidden wires to give his face a maniacal grimace. Projected from the dark onto a 50-foot screen, his unblinking stare and bared fangs are an evil mix of terrifying and hypnotizing, as if he is luring you to your death. Robert had seen the film only once, but for the rest of his life, it would torture his soul. The relationship of Julia and Robert began under uncertain circumstances. The exact date is unknown, but a year after her arrival in London, 21-year-old Julia Mangan was introduced by her roommate Mary Lee to a 27-year-old Welsh carpenter called either Walter Ellis or Walter Mills. Why Robert used an alias is a mystery, but maybe being ashamed of his past, he was hiding the truth. There was no doubt that Julia liked him. He wasn't handsome, but he was cute. He was sometimes funny, but also serious. And although he skirted the facts of his past, his emotion was refreshingly honest. It's a romantic notion that inside every beast, a monster doesn't always lurk. Only Robert's deformity was not upon his skin, but in his soul and in his brain. On the 10th of October 1928, 1 week into their love and just 2 weeks before her death, with his work erratic, Robert lost his job as a carpenter. With no job and no wage, he risked losing his lodging. Only as a man who was haunted by the spectre of his past, what he feared most was loneliness. With no work to occupy his time, he drank. Supping to soothe his sickness, the drink didn't aid his ailments, and lost in liquor, he could no longer trust his own senses. As even when he was awake, in the many months since, he had seen regular visions of a ghastly face and a ghostly voice which goaded him. On Saturday the 20th of October 1928, 1 week before, being hungry and spent, as the harrowing spirit haunted his addled mind, Robert tried to end his torment by ripping apart his throat with a razor. Unable to hold his blade straight, Robert had failed, and in doing so, displeased the voice who only he could hear. Wherever she went, like an icy wind howling down an unlit alley, it sent shivers down her spine, knowing that he was always behind. Whenever she worked, like a havoc-making gremlin, doors were knocked and doorbells rang. And even when she tried to sleep, like the bumps and crashes of a lonely poltergeist who demanded her undivided attention, he would never give her peace. On Sunday the 21st of October at 8:10 p.m., although it was against the rules to have any male friends in her quarters. In her basement bedroom at 25 Stanhope Gardens, Patrick and his girlfriend Hannah came by, only to find Julia crying and Robert blind drunk and collapsed on the bed, muttering incoherently. With his eyes as wide as a werewolf's gaze, just minutes before seeing the moon, and his mouth as bloody as a vampire's kiss after feeding, having gashed his head and mouth in a drunken stumble, Robert didn't look like he was in this world or the next, but trapped in a twilight of misery. Knowing how fragile he was, Julia needed to find the right words to break it to Robert, gently. Only their parting words would never come from her lips, or even his, but those of Lon Chaney. As a domestic servant, Tuesday the 23rd of October 1928 was a typical day for Julia Mangan. She cleaned, she dusted, she washed the sheets, and with her duties done, she finished her shift at 7 p.m. She had a bite to eat, she got dressed. She told Mary Lee, "I'm going out for a breath of fresh air." And at 8:15 p.m, she left. Robert's day was as different to Julia's as night is today. Being bored, having sunk enough booze to sink a battleship, it wasn't the beer in his gut which haunted his brain, as every time he blinked, that face grimaced, those eyes glared, and that voice goaded. It didn't care about his feelings. All it wanted was his troubled boy lying silently in a grave. His gizzard slit from ear to ear as his last breath bubbled through the spewing entrails of his sliced up throat. Hearing only the deep, endless throbbing from inside his head, and its ceaseless witterings inside his ear, like the scuttling of beetles digging into his brain. As if on cue, in his jacket pocket, Robert fingered the blade of his razor. The final act of his life to be a river of blood seeping from his neck. Neither Julia nor Robert had spoken to anyone of their plans that night. Whether they had agreed to meet, or he had followed her to a familiar place, nobody knows. But they would soon meet, for one last time. The scene was set. Hyde Park. One of the few places a person can feel truly alone and isolated amidst the rippling chaos of London streets. It is darkness, shadows, and silence. As an ancient hunting ground, blood has soaked every inch of its soil, and every tree has soaked up the juices of death. The time was set, 10 p.m. More than 4 hours since the sun had set, and with a vague hint of moon obscured by a blanket of foreboding clouds. The night was dark, as the sky brooded gloomily. Being too far from the lights of Park Lane to be illuminated, the twosome sat apart on an old wooden bench, bathed in nothing but the darkness and the cold. To both Robert and Julia, this was to be their last goodbye. Their love affair was over. Only they both saw it ending in two very different ways. Robert would state,
We sat down and talked for a bit.
I said I was going to give up drink, and that sometimes I felt I could not give up. He had tried many times in the past, but he had always failed. Julia said, I will pray for you. God can do nothing unless you do it for yourself. As a Catholic, this was typical of her kindness, believing there was goodness in everyone and giving a hint of hope to follow. Only Robert's demon wasn't booze, but his brain. My head was then getting troublesome. Thoughts came into my mind. I felt my head getting fuller and fuller. It seemed to be steaming at both sides, like a red-hot iron being pushed inside my head. I thought I was in a room, and a man was standing in the corner, pulling faces at me. He shouted at me that he had got me where he wanted me. Goading Robert and tormenting his soul, as it had done in the several months since. Before him was the face, the voice, and the eyes of Lon Chaney. As real as the sweat on his own palm and the razor within. Like a scene from London After Midnight, the horror maestro stood before Robert. His ghoulish eyes bulging as if the devil himself was gouging them out with his sinister thumbs, and his grimaced mouth goading him to kill. Those famished fangs, seeing his trembling flesh, as not enough of a feast to sate its hunger for the tormented boy's bleeding heart. Inside the mind of this disturbed man, as the epitome of terror personified, Lon Chaney was here. Found between the path and the horse track, the first body found was Julia's. Face down and curled up, her left hand still clutched at her throat, as a deep gash had ripped apart her flesh and drained her lungs of her last breath. An ambulance was called, but she was declared dead at the scene. Nearby lay Robert. Found 36 feet away, as if he had tried to flee but failed, Robert was found face down, his back turned, and his throat slit. In his left hand lay the bloody razor, giving us no mystery as to who had murdered Julia Mangan. And yet in his right hand, he held a letter. It was addressed to Julia, written by her mother. The envelope was open, and yet its contents were never disclosed. Discovered in a serious condition, but miraculously still alive, Robert was rushed to nearby St. George's Hospital. He was operated upon, and being discharged a week later, he was arrested for her murder. examined by Dr. Watson, no evidence of insanity or epilepsy was found. And when recounting the incident, Robert didn't mention being terrified by a face. When interviewed by Dr. East, he appeared emotional and depressed, but did recall seeing the face of Long Chaney. And when examined by Dr. Karen Woods, it was believed that Robert had suffered from an episode of epileptic automatism, a seizure of the frontal lobe, where the patient is lucid, but unaware of their actions, as if they are sleepwalking. Declared sane, and with a scarf covering the scar on his neck, on Wednesday the 9th of January 1929, at the Old Bailey, he pleaded not guilty to the charge of murder. Summing up, Mr. Justice Humphreys asked the jury, "I do not know whether you have seen London After Midnight, in which Lon Chaney acted." But he left the weight of the case up to the jury to decide. Was Robert insane and guided by the terrifying memory of a horror actor in a film? Or was he sane and merely using the idea of a vision as an excuse? Having initially failed to reach a verdict, they found him guilty of murder. But given an appeal, his execution was later commuted to a life of penal servitude. Julia's body was returned to her grieving family in Ireland. And while serving his sentence, Robert later died in prison with his throat slit.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello everyone. Let's hope that recorded okay. That was second attempt on that one. Bloody windows, bloody Bill Gates, whoever is the twat that did it. Welcome to Extra Mile, unscripted, unedited, blah blah blah. How long did it take me to do that? That was longer than expected. I got the new laptop all set up, it's all going well. Old laptop is still having to ship off for China for bits because the company that makes it are a twat, basically. But I got a new laptop, and then I recorded this about a couple of days ago, and then when I listened to it, it was all horrible and tinny and horrible. And I spent days trying to find out the problem, and it's bloody Windows 10. There's a thing called an audio enhancer that they put on all of your speakers and everything to make it sound a little bit better. But when you're recording podcasts and things like this, it just makes it sound tinny and hollow. So it took ages to find this little button where you have to press like a, you have to deselect one little thing, and you just think, how would I even know that that's even there, you bastards? Oh, so I've done it, so hopefully this sounds better. I had recorded it before, but it just sounded a little bit, it just didn't sound right, and I'd rather redo everything and take my time than have it sound shit. Oh, right, let me go and pop on a quaffy, a C-W-A-F-F-E-E, quaffy. Oh, how is everyone? Are we all good? Are we all good and well and happy and everyone doing the ting, that's good, that's what life's all about, doing your ting. Oh, don't worry about a ting. Right, coming back. Oh, so what else is going on in the world? Went to our mate's barbecue the other day, that was nice, even though we were creeped out by my friend's dad, who'd recently passed away, had bought her daughter a little dolly for Christmas like 2 years ago, and the dolly basically doesn't exist anymore because it was a cheapy dolly. Unfortunately, the only thing that does exist is this dismembered arm of the creepy dolly, and it's really weird. It's like every time you look around, creepy doll's arm would turn up at the barbecue. It was really, really weird. It's like they are almost certain they got rid of it a couple of days ago, and then it just reappeared. So we were having a good old giggle about old creepy arm. So there we go. What else is going on? We've got the London show coming up. So myself, Adam from UK True Crime, and Paul from True Crime Enthusiast. Obviously, we've got the Glasgow dates coming up end of June. As always, link in the show notes if you can make it to Glasgow. We're doing it at the bargain price of £12. The three of us sat down before we even decided on the content of the show. We said, what is value for money? And we thought a two-hour show, £12, not bad. Also, we'll do a meet-up beforehand and a meet-and-greet afterwards as well. So, you know, a bit of fun there. I've got the London dates sorted. We're going to be posting those soon. I'm just waiting on Paul because he's doing the Manchester date. And we want to post them all together. But so Manchester will probably be end of July. When is London? I think it's end of August, I think. We got a while on that one. So that's fine. So that's going to be exciting. Next week, not going to be a regular Murder Mile episode because I've got to finish doing the... I spent the last while, doing a couple of months, doing all the research for the rest of this year. But what I now need to do is go through all the research that I've got, kind of compile it into a little bit of a Bible so I can work out the chronology of everything. That takes time. So the next 2 weeks, I'm rolling out something interesting. So not quite New Blue. New Blue was interesting. That was with Police Constable Arsenal Guinness, which was really good. Hoping, PCAG, that we can do some more of those soon. That'd be lovely. We'll have some more beers. My coffee's about to go. There we go. Lovely. Next 2 weeks. Coming back. Next 2 weeks, doing a little chat. I did a series of short interviews with two friends who are detectives. So I just wanted to dive into kind of, it was going to be kind of like a New Blue idea, but it kind of, that idea worked well with Paul. It didn't work well this way, but I've kind of found a way to make it kind of interesting. So yeah, it'll be just a two-part series about chats with detectives. So hopefully you'll enjoy that. Big thank you this week to my new Patreon supporters, who are Mark Dubois and Stephen Douglas. I thank you both. Thank you for becoming Patreon supporters. I hope you enjoy all the goodies that are on there. Lots of goodies to enjoy. And there's loads in the back history as well, because I've been doing these since, I think it's episode 50, might be earlier, I'm not too sure, but have a look. Anyway, as always, this is Extra Mile. So let's do some quiz questions, then we'll dive into some extra stuff about this particular case. Right, don't forget, as always, I might balls up some of these questions, or they might get edited out, so there we go. Question number one, what was the UK title of London After Midnight? Question number two, Julia came from Glengariff, but what does that translate as? Question number three, What was the name of Julia's flatmate? Question number four. Except for Lon Chaney, name one of the three other stars mentioned who Julia saw at the cinema. Ooh, burpees. Question number five. What was Lon Chaney's nickname? Question number six. What was the name of Robert Williams' birth mother? Question number seven. Aged 14, how did Robert try to kill himself? Question number eight. Todd Browning, who directed London After Midnight, also directed two other famous horror movies. One of which was good, one of which is not particularly good. Question number nine. What did Robert do as a job? And question number 10. What was the name of Julia's brother? There we go. So, with this episode, I was going to dive into a big discussion about the kind of the medical side of what was going on in court. But I felt it was more interesting to just look at the kind of what happened and kind of Robert's mindset at the moment. But so there were quite a few. The jury had a real problem with this because obviously, like in the case of Joe Ganane that we did ages ago, where the jury kind of had a real different, a real conundrum where the judge had said, you need to decide when his diminished responsibility started and ended. Was it the drugs or was it him? In this case, they were like, is he really seeing visions? Or is he just making this up? So there was quite a few medical kind of specialists there. One medical specialist didn't turn up at some point. So that kind of really stymied the case. So this got actually dragged out for longer than it was. So for the in court, Mr. Peregrine, who I believe was the defence, on the question of insanity, said that this was going to be the most difficult problem in that case. Robert Williams would say that if he killed the girl, he did not remember it. He said that he was subject to epileptic fits, although, as we recall at the start, there was no history of epilepsy in the family. But that doesn't mean he didn't develop epilepsy, because it doesn't just happen. Sometimes you just find that you have it. Or, as we saw with the John Esmond Murphy episode, he had petit mal seizures, so he didn't realise that he was epileptic, but he had the kind of the micro seizures. So there's more than just one type of epilepsy. In court, Mr. Justice Swift said, you have said that many people of high intelligence are going about their work although they are suffering from epilepsy. Are you suggesting that they might commit suicide tomorrow? This was to Dr. Karen Woods. Dr. Woods said, I do not say that, but many people are subject to periods of automatism. So this is the epileptic automatism, in which they are completely irresponsible. There are many thousands of persons suffering from delusional insanity who are doing their work quite well. It would not be wise to put them in an institution or deprive them of liberty unless they have showed a tendency to commit some homicidal or dangerous acts. Now, with Robert, he does have acts. He's not a violent person, but he has tried to kill himself many times before. And we have the incident, the indecent assault on a girl back in Wales. Now, we don't know any more about that. I tried to dig deep into that. There was literally nothing. It was as vague as there is. So it looks like it went to a local court, and then it kind of got thrown out because there wasn't enough information. It was believed that the girl's father who had tried to take this all the way to court, and in the end, the girl who he had assaulted, I have to use in inverted commas, because we don't know what the assault was, she pulled out so that the trial couldn't go ahead. With Robert, he said he doesn't remember the attack at all on Julie. He said, the last thing I remember was Julia whistling, which was something that she'd do when she was nervous. It was unlikely that she was whistling for help because she would have screamed. But they were only about 30, 40 feet away from Park Lane, so not too far away. He says, I do not remember using the razor. I had no intention of hurting her. As mentioned, she was kind of huddled up. She was kind of in a fetal position, face down, her left hand clutching her throat. She was wearing kind of white gloves at the time. That one was absolutely saturated in blood. I think I do have the autopsy down here. Dr. Henry Bright Weir, good name, said the murder weapon was an old-fashioned razor. This was found in Robert's hand. Nearby was her handbag. Her handbag was open. No money had been taken, but in there was the letter. Now, this was on Robert. It was addressed to Julia. It was bearing an Irish stamp. And the postmark was from Julia's mother, their hometown. So it had been sent from her mother, but we don't know what the contents was. Weirdly, Robert and Julia were 11 metres apart, which is about 36 feet. Now, that's roughly the length of a bus. So you'd expect if he kind of loved her and he wanted to die with her, you'd expect him to slit her throat and then wrap himself in her arms if he loved her and all that, and then slit his throat so they could die together. Oh, isn't that romantic? But he doesn't. He's 36 feet away. He's facing the other way as if he's run away. So we don't know whether he attempted to slit her throat. The pathologist said that the wounds were extensive and a lot of force was used. So he'd slit her throat quite deeply. But obviously, cutting your own throat is an entirely different thing because the second you put the blade into your throat, or anywhere near your throat, you're going to feel pain and your body's going to naturally react to that. So he did have a wound to his throat, but it didn't go into any of the kind of the... he suffered a lot of blood loss, but it didn't go into his windpipe, didn't hurt any of the major arteries or anything like that. So he survived. Was it intentional? We don't know. 10:10 p.m. PC John Green, PC 113A, was on duty. Hyde Park. This is the Marble Arch itself was being used as a police station at that point. We do have the main police station, Hyde Park Police Station, where the police officer that we covered before, who was stabbed to death by the homeless man. That's about quarter of a mile away, but this is the kind of the nearest one because it's right on the corner of Oxford Street and Park Lane, so kind of a key place to have a little bit of a small police station. He rushed there hearing about a couple who'd passed out in the park. He turned up and said there was a man and a woman lying on the grass, apparently ill, with blood stains around them. So even at night time, there's no lights there, he could see that there was blood stains around. A short distance away was Robert with a razor in his hand, a large cut to his throat. Nearby was the body of Julia. Now, he said that she was dead at that point. He kind of checked her pulse, but there was nothing going on there. The ambulance turned up and conveyed them both to hospital, to St. George's. This is the original St. George's Hospital, which was on the corner of Park Lane. So basically where the Dorchester is right now, that's the hospital. I always get them confused with, because there was another St. George's and there was also another St. Thomas's as well, which makes researching quite difficult. They were both taken to St. George's. To PC Hollins, who was the officer conveying them, Robert said, "I did it. She had been teasing me." At that point, he was moved to the operating theatre. She was already dead by that point, and he was described as being in a serious condition, but he was discharged on the 28th of October, so that's 5 days later. Dr. Weir said Julia had a large incision across the neck, involving the main veins on both sides. Her wounds extended 4 or 5 inches to the right of the midline and 2 inches to the left. It was a clean cut, completely cutting through the mastoid muscle and completely severing the internal jugular vein. The anterolateral spinal of the fifth cervical vertebrae was cut, and the cause of death was hemorrhage to the throat. So that's how deep it was. It got right down to the spine. The body was identified by her flatmate, whose name I will not mention because that is one of the quiz questions. Well done, Michael. And the pathologist confirmed that her throat wound was not self-inflicted. 24th of October, so that's the next day at 1:10 p.m. Robert, he briefly made a confession to PC Hollins, as just mentioned there. What else we got? When released, he was taken to Cannon Road Police Station and questioned, and then to a Marlborough Street Police Court, where he stated his name and he was placed on remand. Marlborough Street Police Court, he was there wearing a blue serge suit and wore a muffler around his neck to hide the scar of which he had cut his own throat. Let's see if we can find it. The medical evidence was kind of confusing for the audience because they had three medical experts, as mentioned, and they all kind of had different theories about what had happened and what hadn't happened. This is the problem, is it's like problems with your brain is not the same as a broken leg. A broken leg is a broken leg, you can see it. But if you got a problem with your brain, how do you prove that? So Dr. East, the medical inspector of prisons for England and Wales, said that he had interviewed Williams three times in prison. He found him emotional and unstable, liable to attacks of depression and addicted to alcohol, but could not find a reason to suppose that he was epileptic. What else do we have? There was a suggestion that maybe the excess of alcohol may have caused some kind of seizure inside his brain. There was also a belief that excess of alcohol may have caused hallucinations as well. Don't forget, this is an era when obviously the water and the alcohol that's used in our booze is heavily regulated. Whereas back then, pretty much anyone could be a brewer and you could use whatever you like, really. So who knows? Who knows what he was drinking? And maybe being poor, maybe he was drinking something that wasn't particularly good for him. Epileptic automatism. So let's try and see what this is. An epileptic automatism is defined medically as a state of clouding of consciousness which occurs during or immediately after a seizure, during which the individual retains control of posture and muscle tone, but performs simple or complex movements without being aware of what is happening. The most common automatisms, at least in temporal lobe epilepsy, are oral, as in lip smacking, chewing or swallowing, or manual, meaning picking, fumbling or patting. I was going to dive into some other things, but there have been some cases throughout history where this kind of epileptic automatism has been kind of used as a defense by people who have caused death in other places. I won't go into those because it means doing a whole back history on them. But there was one in 1963. A young man strangled and killed a young woman who he was then giving a lift. He dumped her body on the side of the road and drove home. And they said this was kind of the automatism. So Wednesday the 9th of January 1929 at the Old Bailey before Mr. Justice Humphreys, Robert Williams pleaded not guilty to the charge of murder. What else? The jury disagreed on the question of sanity. They were directed by the judge and again retired. They again disagreed and they were discharged. And on the case was postponed until the next session, which was for a retrial. That was on the 21st of December 1928. This is why it took so long. This is why he kind of went to court, and then it was like we had to wait until the January of 2029. The initial trial was made more difficult as the house surgeon for St. George's Hospital was too ill to attend. Mr. Peregrine, defending, said the absence of the doctor placed him in a difficulty as the defence was one of insanity. The doctor was the only observer who could speak of the prisoner's mind at the time. He suggested that the doctor's deposition should not be read as he could not be cross-examined, and the judge agreed, so they had to wait for a retrial on that one. Unfortunately, it does happen. 10th of January 1929, which was the sentencing, Robert became pale when the sentence was pronounced. Mr. Justice Humphrey said, "I do not know whether you have seen any film in which Lon Chaney acted. One of them, we are told, is The Hunchback of Notre Dame and London After Midnight. If any of you members of the jury have seen the latter or even the advertisements on what Mr. Lon Chaney looks like when he is not acting in the film, you may agree it is enough to terrify anybody. It is the story of a haunted house, and Lon Chaney takes the part of a person, really a detective, who pretends to be a most terrifying ghost. If the accused saw that film, you may not think it remarkable, or as in any way indicating insanity, that should, in a moment of emotional excitement, remember the horrifying, terrible aspect of the of an actor in a part in which he was a my brain's forgotten how to read. Purposely. Why could I not read the word purposely? In a part in which he was purposely being terrible. I can myself see nothing in this vision to suggest that the accused was epileptic, which is kind of bad. You shouldn't have a judge giving their opinion. Their job is to kind of marshal everyone, not to say, I don't think he was epileptic, but there we go. Robert Williams was found guilty and sentenced to death, but this was commuted by the Secretary of State to a period of penal servitude. So there we go. Was he insane? Did he see visions that forced him to kill, or was he using it as an excuse? We shall never know. Right, let's do those quiz questions. Question number one. What was the UK title of London After Midnight? It was The Hypnotist. Question two. Julia came from Glengariff, but what does that translate as? Well, it's an easy one because half of it's in the title already. It translates as Rough Glen. Question number three. What was the name of Julia's flatmate? It was Mary Lee. Question number four. Except for Lon Chaney, name one of three other stars mentioned who Julia saw at the cinema. They were Greta Garbo, John Gilbert and Janet Gaynor. Question five. What was Lon Chaney's nickname? He was the Man of a Thousand Faces. Question number six. What was the name of Robert Williams' birth mother? It was Lizzie Jones. Question number seven, age 14, how did Robert try to kill himself? He threw himself against the hind legs of a horse. Question number eight, Todd Browning, who directed London After Midnight, also directed two other famous horror movies. What are they? They were Dracula with Bela Lugosi and Freaks. Freaks is good. It's unnerving and a lot of, there was a big protest because they use a lot of circus performers in that, and a lot of people, even in that era, objected to it, and it got taken off the cinemas. You've got Dracula with Bela Lugosi in it, which is all right, but it's a bit crap. It's a bit long-winded. There is, if you go searching for it, they shot two versions at the same time using the same set, but not the same actors. There's the American version and a Spanish version. And there's even, if you look online, there's a comparison shot between the two directors. Same set, same props. Todd Browning's version is really stagey and really shit. The Spanish version is really good. Really good, but we rarely get to see that. Question number nine. What did Robert do as a job? He was a carpenter. And question number 10. What was the name of Julia's brother? It was Patrick. Of course it was. He's Irish. I say that because I have Irish family and pretty much everyone is called Kevin, Barry or Patrick. So, which makes it really confusing because they have to call each other by different names, and you half the time you're like, which one are you talking about? Because I don't know. Anyway, that's that done. Oh, so don't forget, next week is not regular episodes of Murder Mile. It will be the two detective ones, so I hope you enjoy those. And then we'll be back with another run of 10, 12, 15, whatever. And then a little gap. Hopefully we can do some new blues. PCAG, that would be lovely if we come back. I've got the Guinness on chill at the moment. And then we'll do a run right up until kind of Christmas, and then that's us for the year. Phew. Right. Thank you to everyone for listening to Murder Mile. Hope you enjoyed it. And we shall speak again. Stay safe. Lots of love, everyone. Be good. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.